Yeah, we're trying to fence them in. Yeah, that's what we do with wild animals. We really just try and create a tinier ecosystem. I hear it's good for them. And then I'm going to make some sort of small game reserve and make the children like sell tickets.
Did you name them?
I don't see any downside to this. No, I haven't yet. I haven't.
Your kids didn't name them?
No, they're pretty savvy when it comes to wild animals. There's really no point in naming them because they're either going to die or run away.
That's pretty morbid.
Yeah, which is also what I tell them about their parents. Oh, that got dark. How can we start it? We've already ended it.
Human Pachuga.
Human Pachuga.
Oh, boy.
This is the Still Talking Podcast, our distilling industry podcast, with myself, Brian Christensen, Zeno, Colton, and our favorite, I was going to say the conscience of this podcast, but that somehow indicates like some sort of morality, which that does not exist anywhere here. So, hey, everyone say hi to Rob again.
Hey, guys.
Hey, man.
What's happening? Rob,
you're awesome. We miss you. We've been trying to get you on for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, sorry. Kind of crazy, crazy times for everybody, right?
Right. Yes.
OND.
Yeah, baby. How is so everyone's OND starting out?
Ours is going like gangbusters. I did the math today on how much product we need to ship out before the first of the year, before excise taxes go back up if we don't make a change. Yeah. So we're gonna crank up the production machine here for the last 3 months and get some stuff out the door, save some cash.
I like that you went elbows deep right into FET reduction.
Yeah, which I really appreciate that because he's going to keep Mark Schilling off our ass. Because if someone didn't bring this up every episode, he's going to be on us.
Uh-huh. It's important, man. It's so important. Oh, if you haven't done the math on how much money it's saving you, then you should not be in this business because
it's real dumb amounts. It's a lot.
Yeah.
There's actually a really interesting Facebook conversation, I think it was today, or I just noticed it today. Someone brought up, is the impeachment situation basically going to grind everything to a halt? And because technically there's some rules during the impeachment process where all House business basically comes to a standstill, but we're not there yet. So it's just the inquiries are going on right now. So they're not actually in the impeachment process yet. But theoretically, once that starts, the House stuff basically does come to a standstill. At the very least, it takes away a lot of, a lot of these legislators' focus, and it makes things even more contentious. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I don't know if you guys have any more thoughts on that or any other expertise.
Oh, yeah. You know all of our political expertise.
I saw recently one of the think tanks put out an article about how it was only the big guys that were benefiting from
that was a while ago
the tax break.
Yeah, that one was dumb.
I mean, it was September 6th. That's not that long
really?
Ago.
That is like a whole
month. There was another one because there was one that came out before we all met in DC. So there's been another one since then.
This is building on that. Yeah, it's Brookings.
Yeah.
Did you read about that on NPR?
Yeah.
Maybe.
You libtard. That's a word.
I am so grossly like middle of the road. I annoy every human being I talk to. I'm weird. My politics are fucked up.
You're a right-wing snowflake.
I'm basically a right-wing libertarian, socially liberal weird. I don't even know what I am.
Well, you
basically
live in Eastern Washington, so
leave me alone.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of it's just to fit in.
There's no rules there.
I moved to the woods. I don't care.
Hey, so not to sidetrack this thing so early, but I really want to know an update on your bear situation.
Oh yeah, the bear. It's still
this is the only reason people tune in.
Yeah, just the the Spokane Bear information. There's no updates. It's out there. Some dude keeps leaving his trash cans out, so it keeps like harassing his house because he's an idiot.
Oh, I thought it was like on your property exclusively.
Yeah, we're trying to fence him in. Yeah, that's that's what we do with wild animals. We really just try and create a tinier ecosystem. I hear it's good for him. And then I'm going to make some sort of small game reserve and make the children like sell tickets.
Did you name them?
I don't see any downside to this. Hmm. No, I haven't yet. I haven't.
Your kids didn't name them?
No, they're pretty savvy when it comes to wild animals. There's really no point in naming them because they're either going to die or run away.
That's pretty morbid.
Yeah. Yeah, which is also what I tell them about their parents. Oh, that got dark.
Yeah. I have a question I've been dying to ask, you know.
Yeah.
So, Yogi and Boo Boo, right? First off, why does Yogi not have any pants on? But he's got a tie and a short sleeve shirt. Like, what's that all about, right? Do you know?
Where does
Boo Boo's not wearing anything. Though, right? And what's the relationship there? Like, Boo Boo seems significantly younger than Yogi, right?
Dude, who wears ties in like the middle of the day and picnics
with no pants?
Are fabulous gay men. All right,
I just thought you might have some insight in that. That seems like something you'd be into. So,
we just solved the mystery.
I feel like you're hinting that Yogi might be grooming Boo Boo, and this is getting real weird real quick. I'm definitely not going to be able to watch that cartoon the same way.
No, I think they're running from the homophobe that is the park ranger.
You know, that being said, I'm thinking about, did Fred Flintstone have pants on?
No, but he wore a long...
He wore like a long skirt.
Yeah.
Or a dress. In some circles, they call that a dress.
Yeah, because he's a caveman. He does what he wants. That's pretty progressive.
Yeah.
A moo moo, right. But he wore like the same thing that Betty and Wilma wore.
Oh, yeah.
They all wear the same kind of loincloth.
I think there was only one dinosaur tailor back then.
Is it a dinosaur that's doing the tailoring, or they're making the clothes out of dinosaurs?
And it was Yogi. Yogi was the tailor.
That's his style.
Yeah.
Because he just wants to look at everyone's junk.
This is fabulous.
Best podcast ever.
That might have been offensive.
Hey, what's our topic anyway today?
I don't know. Let's get into the news. Jump into the news. Stop. Rob, don't just come on here and just start
This is a structured podcast.
We only started doing the news because of you.
Right. Well, if you'd get the news right, then, you know, I wouldn't have to come on.
No. No, that's why we bring you on, is to correct the news and to air your grievances, which will be most of the episode. Right. First, I'm going to give a shout out to our favorite people in Montana that we just talked about anyway, the release of Orphan Girl Limited Edition Breast Cancer Awareness. The main reason I'm bringing this up is because it lets me mansplain mammograms to people by reading this. It's awesome. It is recommended that women aged 21 to 65 get a pap smear every 3 years, and women over the age of 40 get a mammogram every year. That's in the press release. God, I love you guys. You can tell they actually care. And they have a Booze for Boobs sticker on their press release, which, man, Headframe, I love those guys.
Yeah,
John was just in Louisiana.
That dude's everywhere.
Oh, was he? Nice. He's everywhere.
Yeah, he texted me and was like, "Hey, I'm in Louisiana. Are you around?" And I was like, "Getting on a plane to San Francisco tomorrow." So no,
that's cool. No, I dig their specialty releases where it's their standard Orphan Girl, but they have like their Pride, they have their Pride Month label, they have this breast cancer awareness label. In terms of specialty releases with the same product, I think they're doing it right. I dig that style.
Very cool.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, it is. All right, let's see.
How do I buy it in Louisiana?
Call John. No, call Courtney. Courtney will actually do it. She'll get it for you. There's a quick TTB note I thought was interesting. This one came out a couple weeks ago, but I always appreciate their little tidbits and tips, since they're the ones that see all the screw-ups and they're the ones that actually tell people when they're making mistakes occasionally. But it says, avoiding common errors on your labels, government health warning. They're very specific when it comes to the government health warning for the TTB, and they said that is one of the most common problems they see in the alcohol beverage labels that caused them to send back the cola applications for corrections, is errors on that mandatory health label. And that includes everything from like punctuation to space.
Put it in all caps. So that was the thing that I learned. If it's,
is it, does that actually,
yeah, if it's not in all caps, they'll send it back. If like one word that's supposed to be, one letter that's supposed to be capitalized isn't capitalized, they'll send it back.
Right, right. Okay, that's good to know that if you can put it all in. Oh yeah, it's actually, let's see. Here's the following tips. It says the words government warning must appear in capital letters and in bold type. Don't omit or change any punctuation marks, periods, commas, colons, parentheses. And you may not include health warnings specifically related to alcohol consumption that are required by a foreign government. So you may not include those warnings. So that is something.
I want to hear what some of those warnings are. Like.
What are they requiring that we aren't?
Yeah, like you might end up not wearing pants with a smaller version of yourself, naked version of yourself, and chased around by a homophobe.
Pretty much.
And Indonesia.
Thank you for being specific.
So I just want you guys to know I'm watching the NL wildcard game right now.
So you'll be in and out.
Yeah, the Washington Senators.
Are you telling us to be quiet for a minute?
Yeah, they just went up. They were down 3-1. They just scored 3 runs in the bottom of the 8th. They're up 4-3 now. So,
wild card games are the best. It's like the best baseball to watch.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah,
it's good to have these up to minute score updates for people listening.
Yeah, that are going to hear this 3 weeks from now. Yeah.
All right. Here is a good segue for our next piece of news. Considering the COLA approval and safety stuff, this is one Colton dug up. McQueen Gin ad banned for linking hiking and drinking. Yeah, a television ad for McQueen Gin is banned after being deemed irresponsible for linking alcohol consumption with mountain climbing.
That does sound irresponsible.
A match made in heaven.
Right? And it's another one of the UK Advertising Standards Authority rulings. So we've been seeing a lot of those. Basically, don't associate alcohol with anything.
Do you think that in the ad they were drinking before mountain climbing? So otherwise,
I hope they were doing it during.
Yeah.
That just reminds me of like mountain whiskey.
Yeah, they do hang that out, shit all the time.
Yeah, hang out on the side of a plateau and drink a bunch of alcohol. Made in Indiana.
Fill your camel back.
You fill that camel back. It'll keep it sanitized too. Awesome.
Dude, have you guys ever watched some of the videos that Ryan Reynolds has done for Aviation Gin?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
They're so great. But he would never get away with it in the UK, I feel like.
Yeah. No. Well, and here, this is interesting. It actually says the UK advertising code stipulates that alcohol adverts must not imply sporting or physical activities were undertaken after consuming alcohol. So that's the very
So don't drink and play soccer?
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, aren't they considering, like, they're always considering it, but stronger than normal, just plain packaging?
Yeah.
Get there.
That was in the Mark Brown letter today.
Yeah, that was it. Where I saw it. Yeah, where it would be like a $400 billion loss to the industry.
Yeah. And then there was a link that you could like go to a Google for what plain packaging looks like. And it's horrifying. There's like pictures of smokers who've, you know, their entire jaws removed. And, you know, like that has to go on a pack of cigarettes. Yeah.
Jesus.
You have to put a smoker on your whiskey bottle.
I guess, yeah.
Honestly, if that image was on a whiskey bottle, I'm like, man, what's going on here? I want to check this out. Yeah. That's a good look.
That is a good look. All right. Another one Colton sent me. Barley and packaging, biggest carbon dioxide contributors compared to what? Damn it, Colton, you're making me read again. Finnish drinks group, Altea has calculated the carbon footprint for a bottle of its Kaukauskoruga, I'm butchering that, vodka with packaging barley cultivation, the biggest contributors.
Packaging and barley.
When packaged in a glass bottle, the brand's carbon footprint can be measured in 2.19 kilograms carbon dioxide equivalent, with 43% of emissions coming from packaging and 40% from barley cultivation. Hmm. Wow. I really got to read your new stuff.
I'm all for saving the earth, but somebody's got way too much time on their hands there.
Yeah, it's getting real specific. Yeah. Also, I need more comparisons. Otherwise,
this is cultivating barley take more energy than cultivating corn or rye or wheat or anything else? Or is it the malting process?
No,
it's probably the malting.
Yeah, it's not giving any side-by-side details. It looks like they just did a singular study on one SKU.
N1.
Right. Good job, Colton. No. Sounds like a shitty article you found.
Yeah. Do you like how I totally threw him under the bus his fault? Totally. Even though I'm the one actually curating and reading it. Colton, you did fine.
Look,
sorry.
I go for the headlines. It looked interesting. I figured you clickbait. Know, we it out from there.
Clickbait.
Yeah, he's like that fucking guy. He's like, hey guys, I've read this study. Yeah. I'm like,
did you read it on NPR?
Oh, I totally read it on NPR.
So speaking of which,
he fact-checked it against Breitbart. He's really making sure he's doubling up.
Yeah. Did you guys see the article on George Clooney and his dad look? So there's this article of George Clooney that he looks like a dad. He's wearing a polo and jeans, and he's got this beautiful beard. It's awesome. I wonder if he all the money he made on that. What was his tequila brand? What's it called?
I don't know. Casamongo. I'm pretty sure it's Casamongos.
Casamongos. Okay.
Casamongos.
I'm totally going to. Mongos.
I thought you were going to say mongoloid, and I'm like, dude, I don't know if you could say mongoloid.
Dude, I'm pretty sure you can't, but you just did.
I edited it. So, fuck off.
So now it sounds like you said it.
Yeah. Damn it. Yeah. He did. Shit.
It's going to drive me nuts. Touché. What's the name of his tequila brand, Brian?
Casamigos.
Oh, no, it's not. Oh, come on, man.
It's Mingo.
Casamigos.
I'll
say it however you want me to, baby.
So, Brian, just so you know, I texted Colton and Zeno before this, and I told them we have to do shots for every time you say Casamigos.
Oh, I can just keep saying Casamigos. Is there any particular articulation you prefer? Because whatever makes you drink more.
Nah, Casamigos. I mean,
your best Spanish accent would be preferred.
There you go.
My Spanish accent always ends up sounding like Eric Cartman within three syllables. It's real bad. My kids get real upset, and I love it.
I mean, I'm upset just hearing about it.
You should. You should. And then I tell them to go find a bear. Quit bugging me.
Preferably one wearing a tie and no pants.
With a little buddy named Boo Boo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little weird now. I'm really thinking on it. It's
I don't like thinking about it. It's real bad. All right, last piece of news that won't be relevant by the time they listen to this, but you guys got any big plans for National Vodka Day on October 4th?
Didn't even know that was a
thing. Actually, I'm making vodka on the 4th, so, you know, that works, I guess.
Good enough. I figure people with vodka brands would want to know that.
Maybe. I'll probably be making vodka on the 4th too.
Since it's the only thing you make right now.
Yeah, right.
Right. All right. That's all your fucking news. Okay.
Yay, news.
Hey, isn't FET set to expire soon? I mean, isn't that news?
What FET? Like, didn't we extend that? I mean, that's such a big deal, and people are
saving
so much
money. What's our FET countdown?
No, I don't know. I read an email that said we extended it, but I don't know. It might be fake news.
Fake news. Pretty sure Colton tells me every other day I got extended. No, it has not been extended, and we need to get on that because that's going to
2 months and 28 days.
Ugh.
2 months and 20 days.
Good job. Did you go to the ACSA website to find
out? I sure did. I skipped over the hours and minutes, but
American Craft Spirits Association is your organization for the distiller by the distiller.
That's right.
Don't forget that.
Good plug.
Damn.
I mean, I feel like the guy who's actually on the board for ACSA should be doing that, Colton. But
I used their website. I gave them hits on their website. What else do they need?
You gave them hits.
I gave them hits.
Hits. Yeah.
So it's GABF week here in Denver, and they're like today three separate sales reps walk into my place because, you know, they're in town for GABF. Might as well go try to sell Rob some barrels, right? So yeah. Anyway, it got me and them talking about conferences and associations and so ACSA is on the top of my head, as usual.
Nice. As it should be.
Excellent. All right.
Speaking of that, Rob, you had a topic you wanted to talk about, and I don't know if you want to go into it now, but you have been chomping at the bit to talk about judging competitions. Ooh,
yeah.
And I think that's a good topic.
There's a good chance I'll get myself in trouble, but yeah, we can talk about it.
Oh, fuck yeah. You'll get yourself in trouble. It'll be great, which will be nice because it's the one time we won't get in trouble.
And the judging is coming up in like 3 weeks. So
yeah, I've been getting hit with notifications on ACSA's is obviously coming up right around the corner, and then all the other kind of smaller craft ones are starting to happen right now too.
Yep. So.
Speaking of emails, no, never mind.
Hillary Clinton. Oh, boy. Shit, you guys are fucking pathetic that you laughed at that.
Yep.
Anyways. Yeah, what do you want to talk about judging?
I don't know. I feel like, you know, honestly, I would love to have some other people on as well and just have a real healthy conversation about it because, I mean, they're valuable.
Well, you're not going to get that here.
They're yeah, right. They're definitely valuable. Like, you know, my favorite part about judging competitions is when I get the notes, right? And, you know, and the hope is that their panel of judges is legitimate and they know what they're talking about. And, you know, I really appreciate getting the notes from the tasters on our spirits and, you know, getting some good positive or negative feedback on, you know, unbiased and, you know, they don't know who I am. They don't know what spirit it is, you know, what brand it is, any of that sort of stuff. And so
well, how many competitions do you even get notes off?
Well, we don't enter a whole lot of competitions. So the ones we do enter are ones we get notes from. So there you go. Right.
Can you give us an example of what are useful notes and what are shitty notes? I mean, you've seen them all. So do you want to see production notes? Do you want to see things about marketing? Like people say, hey, this would
shitty
be
shitty notes are taste good, doesn't taste good.
Right, exactly. So give us, you've had a lot of experience. What are you looking for?
Well, first off, the marketing side of it, you're not going to get notes on because typically they won't see the bottle when they're tasting it, right? Like they just see a glass with liquid in it. So
occasionally you'll get someone in retail who tell you a way that it, like the market it could fill. It's rare, but I've seen it every
Oh, time. Like the niche for the spirit. You know, if you have something special like a RTD or something, right?
Yeah, like my strawberry Malort.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, this will be great in this, you know,
in this suburb of Chicago.
Strawberry.
Yeah, admittedly, those were the rarest of the notes, but I'm just curious if those are ever helpful. Yeah. You're just looking for pure production. And again, what's a good note? And what's
right. You know, notes on cuts, right? Like, oh, this tastes headsy. This tastes like it has some tails in it. You know, maybe better fermentation. There's some fermentation flaws in here. And to be honest, if I get those notes from only one judge and no other judges, then typically I'll just kind of write it off as a, yeah, okay, so that right. person feels that way. But if I get this is headsy from two or three or four different judges, then I know I have a problem and I can go back and look at it and maybe fix it, right? So
do you make a note of which bottle and which bottling absolutely. You send off so that you yeah. can specifically go back yep. and look at it?
Yep. Okay. Yep. But
Do you
feel
go and pick your best that you send in, or do you just go off the shelf?
Well, that's one of the things that I kind of have a problem with judging is like
everyone sending you know, their best. There's no way
everybody's sending their best, and it's not necessarily a representation of their product. You know, like sure, it is their product, but is it what the consumer is going to buy on the shelf? Is it the exact product that the consumer is going to buy on the shelf?
Yeah, you made one barrel 10 years ago that you've set right. aside just for judging and you just pull yeah. off that each time
yeah. right, but the 1,000 cases that you sell of that product come from, you know, a dozen other barrels that are only a couple years old, right? You know, it's the same brand, it's the same bottle, whatever, but yeah, so that's definitely one of the qualms I have about judging. And I was thinking about that actually randomly today, you know, how could you fix that? Like, could anybody have some sort of judging competition where they could randomly show up at your distillery and just grab a bottle, or they could go to a store.
Yeah, you'd buy it. You'd say your entry fee is X amount and that pays for us to go buy it on yeah. the show. I would right. be super suspicious of that email, but
yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, isn't that how the TTB does it? Like the random sampling the TTB does? Don't they go to the store and they
yeah,
buy
I don't
it
think they charge
the
you though.
No, they don't charge you, but you know. But that's how you would get around the somebody just choosing their best stuff, right?
Yeah, that would be a super interesting competition to see.
Right.
I would love that, but I think that a lot of it is, you know, what people are choosing, what competition, right? If they want, if they're like you and how I'm pretty sure Colton and I are too, and they want the honest feedback, that's different than if like, hey, I just want a fucking mm-hmm. gold medal so I can put it on in my yeah. tasting room, mm-hmm. right? Like, so that's a different
yeah, beast. But you're not going to get honest feedback. I mean, you'll get honest feedback, but it still won't be that relatable if everyone else at the panel or everyone else at the competition is sending your best or their best, you send in your average, you're already looking, your score is going to naturally be lower. Assuming,
maybe, right? Yeah, I mean, that's assuming that there's a small range from someone's best to someone's average, which, right. I mean, it's kind of, that's hard to, we can't even, there's no way to quantify that.
Yeah. Really. If there's a flawed product, the chances are that their best is still going to have that flaw.
That's true.
I think Xena brings up a good point that range of quality versus crap. Yeah, you might run into a barrel that has a problem, but most people are going to notice that during the blending process or during the bottling process. So how big is that range? I don't know. And you bring up a good point too, Rob, that essentially if you want the notes, what's the point in sending in your best product to get the notes on that? You're not going to get actual useful and relevant taste actual judging notes back to tell you what may be a problem.
This is great. I know it's fucking great. Tell me it's great.
Right. Well, and
as your marketing department,
you do get people, we've been on the backside of this enough that occasionally you do get someone who will call in and say, this is bullshit. Where's my gold? I got a gold at all these competitions. Here are the people making it. It's gold worthy. I expected a gold. And essentially you have to just tell them, no, it didn't get a gold. So you do have those people that are only doing it for the medal. They're a minority, I think, but well, I shouldn't say that. Everyone wants a gold, obviously, but the people doing it just to get the medal for marketing purposes, they're not the ones we're usually dealing with.
Right. And I think that you pick which competition you're going to go to. I mean, we've kind of learned now enough of which competitions are medal mills and which ones will give you good feedback. And to Rob's point, you only send it to ones that you're getting feedback, right? So that being said, Rob, are you sending just one off the shelf, or are you trying to handpick one?
Honestly, it depends on the product. So if it's our vodka or our gin or our rum, yeah, we're just grabbing one off the bottling line, basically. If it's our whiskey, we actually send in multiple submissions of different barrels and of our final blend, one of our final blend, so that we can get those notes, right? Like if we have inkling that this one particular barrel is just amazing and we want to get justification on that, we'll send that one in and see what people think, right?
Right.
Right. So you're really leveraging that you're getting an outside, unbiased opinion, and you're just like, taste all of these and then you can make decisions, or you can help guide your decision after. That's pretty clever. Good on you. Yeah.
So, Rob, I got to ask, because there's a lot of people in the industry that do tasting notes. You usually have to pay a hell of a lot more than the entry fee for a spirits competition. Right. But you can call someone up. You can call a Steve Beal, come up with whatever the rate is, send him your product. He'll send you back your notes. How much is that? More useful, less useful than kind of a blind sampling? I mean, why are they both valuable? Why do you do one as opposed to the other?
I'd say they're both valuable. I mean, it's another conversation to be had about judging. Some of these things, like the whiskey Bible, is one guy's opinion, right? And that guy drinks so much whiskey, right? So is he right? Who's to say he's right? He's put out a lot of books and has claimed a lot of really good whiskey is really fucking good. So I'd like to think that he knows what he's talking about, but it's still one guy's opinion. And when he tasted your sample, what kind of data did he have? Because to taste as much whiskey as that guy does in his book, how often is he drinking, right? Like, and this...
Yeah, what's his
right, what's his methodology? And so...
He comes in with just a vitamin IV... sits down.
and let's be honest, like, were his thresholds like quantified? So does he detect something at a much smaller or part per billion than someone? Like, there's all kinds of elements to that. That's where, like, mainly a lot of sensory comes down to statistics. And to your point, I'd rather trust statistics of a larger group than one person.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, the scientific
sample. Well, and then there's the added benefit of, you know, if you do well, you have this sort of semi-free marketing piece too.
Right.
Where if you just paid, if you just paid someone to, you know, taste your whiskey, it's you don't put "Tasted by Steve Beal" stickers on the bottle.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw this out here. I will put a "Tasted by Zeno" sticker on your fucking bottle. You want to send me something?
I will. Oh, give I thought you were going to go to stores and just put on the stickers.
Yeah. Yeah. He just breaks into Total Wine and More and he just sticks that on everything.
I'll tell you if I fucking hate it or what I hate about it. I'll gladly drink spirits and judge them for you if that's really what you want. But I'm one data point, right? Like,
and his methodology is he dresses up in a Yogi Bear outfit. While that's the only methodology.
And you only eat really spicy Indian food before you do it.
Yeah. Well, I smoke cigars the entire time. I don't actually drink it. I put it in my dog's bowl. I don't own a dog, but I get it for this occasion. And I make my dog drink it. And then his reaction is how I give you your tasting notes.
I tell you what. Most of the competitions I go to, the judges are absolute professionals. But the very first one I ever went to, some dumbass from the cigar side of the industry with his toes a little bit in the spirit side, he was smoking between flights. And he, oh my God, every single person in the back room was just furious.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, it was bad. I mean, obviously it's years later. I'm still talking about it, how absolutely furious. And then I never, you know, he was never invited to anything ever again. So
I just axe body spray up.
Oh, God.
You got to stay fresh.
I'll tell you what, one year I got like real sick on the second day and I'm like sniffling. I'm like, oh fuck, this is awful. I felt really bad about it. 'Cause I'm like, right. And like my nose was running. I'm like, God damn it. I don't know what happened. And like three other people got sick right after.
Why are you making out with everybody, dude?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I get a couple drinks in me. Yeah. Yeah. Get a couple drinks in me. I'm a regular Yogi Bear.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. We just made a terrible thing. But personally, in my mind, I love the fact that Zeno's Yogi Bear and Colton is Boo Boo because they've got the opposite height thing going. It really works for me.
Oh, God. That's so true. Good job.
Yeah, I know, right?
Does that make... Wait, Brian, does that make you the park ranger?
Oh no, no, because you said he was homophobic. That's not cool. No.
I just can't. Colton sounds way too much like Krusty the Clown for me to think of him as anything else.
Oh yeah, that's pretty
good.
That's
amazing.
It is.
I'm glad we're talking about judging though too, because you know, we have a competition coming up that I'm actually a judge in. So I like hearing your feedback
about it. So I've got a couple more things.
Please.
And by all means, I try and be as I'm like, I think this might be what's going on. Like if it's a gin, I'd be like, the base spirit needs some work, or right, you over extracted by macerating too long. And like I try to give those kind of things on every single freaking piece of paper. And it's tough. Because, you know, when you're doing, you might be drinking 80, right? And I'm glad that you think that's important. And I mean, because I always look at it as like, what do I want from
a panel? So let's talk about that. So I submitted one of our gins last year to a judging. I'm not going to tell you which one. And this is a gin that crushes it in the market. Like it is our biggest seller. It's a big deal. It's people love it, right? Like, of course, everybody's going to tell you that to your face, but like the sales volume alone is telling me that this is a good gin. Okay. I got absolutely toasted in my notes on this gin. And so for a day or so, I was like, man, what, you know, like, do we need to reformulate it? What's wrong with it? But people are buying it. I don't, you know, it seems like people like it. What's going on? And then I started thinking about it, and it's like, I've made a handful of gins in my career and all of them are a little bit different, right? And this particular gin is made to be a spirit forward. It's a high ABV gin that is delicate. So this is a martini gin, right? This is not a gin to be made. I specifically made it that way. It's not a gin to be mixed with, a Tom Collins or a tonic, right? It's not a gin and tonic gin. It is a martini gin. It's meant to have a splash of vermouth, a twist of lemon, some orange bitters, and it's done, right? So I feel like gin in particular is a category that's really hard. What's the benchmark, right? Like, because the gin is so widely varied, and it's the way the rules work, right? All you have to do is put juniper in, and then the sky's the limit for botanicals. So there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of different botanical, millions of botanical combinations that you could have in a gin. So what's to say one gin is better or worse than another? What's the benchmark? Is it, is it Tanqueray, right? Like, what is it? And so I feel like competitions need to do a better job of kind of putting categories together, but that's hard. I wouldn't want to have that job.
Contemporary, London Dry.
Yeah, but where are those rules, right? Like, what's the difference between a contemporary and a London Dry?
I think those have good definitions. For one, what the distillery themselves classified it as, where they want to be. But contemporary is way harder because that just means basically anything.
It means it's not London Dry.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, contemporary is what you're saying. But I think that a lot of places and competitions they can do, like, all right, here are three best in class, world renowned contemporary gins. Here are three best in class, right? Like number one SKU, London Dry. And like, set that as, because you're talking about setting a benchmark, right?
Yeah. Well,
and it's like you need something to work either backwards from or start at.
Right.
Right. So if you say, okay, Beefeater, or let's go Hendrix. What would you call Hendrix?
Yeah.
Western style, I would say.
Right. Yeah. So like, call it just more like contemporary gin. But there's a big preference in there. I don't really care for
cucumber
Hendrix gin. Right. I don't like cucumber in my gin very much, but I still respect that Hendrix is very well crafted, like if that's a baseline set. So I think that you have some weight to that, and a gin is a weird category. And I was on a gin panel, and it was, to Colton's point, the contemporary section of it is ridiculously difficult.
So then the other thing particular to gin is, there's not a whole lot of people that drink gin neat, right? Like, gin is a spirit more than any other spirit that gets mixed with something.
You think it should be a,
or at least
cocktail
chilled
competition
down.
Cocktail for
it. Yeah. So what if that is it? Like, what if the tasting part of this competition, when it comes to gin, it's the same cocktail for every gin, but how does this gin hold up in tonic? How does this gin hold up in a martini? How does this gin hold up in a Tom Collins, right? Because whiskey, people drink it neat all the time. That's how you catch the flaws. That's how you know if it's good or not. You got to drink it neat. Vodka, kind of the same thing, though it could be argued vodka is typically mixed, and that would be the best way to, really judge a vodka would be to drink it neat to catch the flaws. Gin, not so much. Like, what flaws are you going to catch by drinking it neat?
Well, I don't know. I feel like I would agree with you if it was a general consumer judging, but since the theory is that we have professional industry judges, from bartenders to distributors to producers, everyone around booze all the time, they should be able to taste a gin and say, oh, this would do well in a gin and tonic or a martini, they should be able to pick that apart.
You're saying they should be able to deduce that just by drinking.
I would say so. Does the distiller submit their own cocktail recipe and say, this is the recipe you need to make for this,
No, I think it's.
So not everyone's gin. Yeah. Not everyone's gin works with even the same gin and tonic. Maybe you need a different
tonic producer.
Yeah.
I need Fever Tree.
Right.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, Schweppes, the judging. Schweppes,
so.
sets those parameters. Like, would you want your gin tasted in a gin and tonic, a martini, or Tom Collins, right? And so instead of choosing the styles, contemporary, London dry, whatever, you say, okay, I want my gin tasted with other gins, hit the exact same amount of vermouth and bitters and lemon peel, right? Like, so they're all judged in the same cocktail with the same vermouth at the same temperature or whatever, right? So you balance the factors there, and then you get to choose what your gin is tested with.
I think it's a slippery slope though, because if you have all these other elements, what if you're masking what that spirit actually is?
This is true.
That's why it works.
Yeah.
You'd have to do it
neat and in a cocktail.
And in
yeah, right.
A cocktail.
I agree with that.
Yeah, because otherwise you're just doing a cocktail competition.
Not necessarily. I mean, cocktail competition is all about making the cocktail and how good the cocktail is. This is the same cocktail for every gin, same amount of vermouth, same amount of bitters, same temperature. You know, like, you control all those variables. So the only thing different is the gin from each one. And then you taste through, you know, let's just call it martini. And you taste through the martini with five different gins. And then you judge them based on how does it hold up in a martini.
So, and I think, you know, I think theoretically this could be done. I don't know that I'm on board with the idea, but theoretically what you'd do is you'd pre-mix you'd pre-mix one batch of cocktail without the gin, and then you would
pipette
you would measure out that amount.
Yeah, hydrate.
Yeah, and then you'd pipe, yeah. Then you put in the exact same amount of gin for every product, and then you would serve it side by side, neat. Yep. So that you minimize that number of variables. You can't have a bartender sitting there making each drink by hand. One, you'd have a time constraint, you'd have a cost constraint, and then you'd have more variables. That'd be a serious problem. So I think it theoretically could work, but then you're right. You have the issue of, okay, well, this is great for gin and tonic, but this other one is for martinis. So you'd potentially have to give them multiple options, or just say, we only do it this way. If you don't like it, don't send it into this competition.
Yeah, well, when you submit your spirit for judging, you choose which cocktail it's going to get judged in.
Yeah.
And I could see that. And then you could theoretically do a flight. You could flight them that way too.
I would feel like your notes back from that would reflect a lot of the cocktail itself versus your gin in it too.
Right.
So, you know, like Brian said, you're certainly not going to see a flaw as easily unless it's a major flaw, if it's hiding behind a bunch of other, you know.
Yeah, but the root of it is, like, getting back to how I started this, gin is 99% of the time drank in a cocktail. So if it has a flaw that doesn't show up in a cocktail, who cares?
Yeah, that's true.
Right? If it makes a good cocktail, that's why you're buying it.
How do you make
a
market reality competition?
Yeah.
You get a tonic sponsor. I
mean, I will say this. I will say this though. Like, I mean, as you know, I was the judge and of a gin, and there was like 80 some gins. I did definitely, you know, I would like, oh man, this is over extracted. It's too tannic, right? It's cloying. There's things like that. Or I'm like, okay, the base spirit is flawed. I could say that. To your point, if it was in a gin and tonic, would I notice that? Maybe not. But I don't know. Are you going to get good feedback?
Well, that's why it also gets tasted neat. So, you know, this in this particular spirits judging, it gets tasted neat, and then a distiller or, you know, otherwise can pick up the flaws, and you get notes back on that. But then it's also tasted in a cocktail because that's how it's used in the real world.
Fair enough. So like one of the other distillers here in Louisiana, we had a quick conversation about gin, because we both made gin and a bunch of gins and different types of gin. He's like, man, gin's such a weird thing because, you know, I like certain gins at certain times. Like he's constantly cycling through different gins, and I can relate with that, right? Like sometimes I really like Plymouth gin. Sometimes I get Plymouth gin. Sometimes, you know, my wife wants Hendrix, so she'll get Hendrix. Sometimes I want Aria, right? Like there's all these ones like you have a hankering for. That gin is like this fluid, people Is there a lot of brand loyalty with gin like there is with vodka?
I don't think there is as much. I think there used to be, but now there's so many on the market that, and they're all so vastly different.
Yeah, you're right. I would say 10 years ago, there was huge brand loyalty. Now it's completely variable depending on what bar you go to.
Right. So then there's some serious weight to like, hey man, I fucking like gin and tonics because I live in New Orleans and it's 10,000 degrees all the time. I like a cold drink with a piece of fucking citrus fruit.
Right.
So then you're going to go and be like, well, what gin works best in a gin and tonic? There's some weight to that for sure.
So Rob, I want to bring up this one thing because I think it ties in with what you're talking about in terms of, you know, having a product that you have an expectation you know is good, but it kind of gets hammered or it doesn't score as well. And one of the problems that can come with that, not just say missing the opportunity to put it in a cocktail, we're specifically talking about gin here, but we're talking about things like palate fatigue.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to even ignore the idea of the caliber of judge. Let's just assume we're working with really good qualified judges. We know they know what they're talking about because you need that with a gin panel. Most of the competitions I've worked with usually do a really good job of getting some qualified people in there, except for people like me. They make the mistake of calling assholes like me. But assuming everyone else is quality, you still have really quality judges that butt up against palate fatigue. And even prior to palate fatigue, and I want you guys to talk about this because you guys have worked backroom and as judges, the most consistent problem I always see judges tackle is that first flight is almost always judged more harshly than everything that comes after it. First flight is like people, unfortunately, just because of human nature, it's used as a calibration round where they're trying to get a baseline. They're trying to get themselves acclimated to the products that are coming in. The next few flights tend to get scored a little better. That could just be because they're better product, but it also is often because they're just calibrating their own palates. They're getting used to what's coming. And in hindsight, they're kind of comparatively looking at products and like, oh, actually that was pretty good. And I've talked to a lot of judges who've said, God, yeah, I wish I could go back and taste that first flight again. So what do you guys feel about that? And how do we combat that problem?
I think that the competition, I know that Colton has been in the back side of it and he reflights things like that.
Yeah.
He'll purposely do that to try and get around that. Right. Cause like let's say you have six spirits on one flight. And, you know, you're going to judge it really hard, then put it somewhere in like the middle of the day or the second day or something like that. Right. So at least maybe you could do that with like the first two or three. Mm-hmm. I think there are competitions out there that are taking.
Yeah. You just got to make sure that's very clear from the get go that you know which score you're taking. So it doesn't seem like, oh, well, they didn't score my product that I have some relationship with. Good. I'm sending it back until it gets something better.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's real.
Well, fair. I mean, we're gonna assume Scout's honor with all this, right? Like people are being not pieces of shit.
Yeah.
And right.
Reflighting has to be done very sparingly. You've got to have a real good reason. Things like if someone's sick and they have to recuse themselves, stuff like that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, in circumstances like that where there's a real weird outlier, reflighting can be an option, but I think this is just my personal bias. I think it has to be the last option because that gets really.
Brian, what you were saying kind of made me think maybe we should just have like a dummy flight. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A dummy flight.
A dummy flight, right?
Send Jack Daniels out to every panel.
Yep.
Vodka, gin, rum, whatever.
Yeah. No, actually, I think you're actually kind of hitting on one of the experiences I've had that I've really liked is I work with a charity group that does a spirits judging, and they've actually for years have done wine judging. And this comes from the wine world. They'll do what's called a wine wash where they give everyone a small flight of wine, sometimes just a single wine, sometimes a couple, usually a white wine. And you go through and you essentially judge that wine and you essentially calibrate your palate a little bit. It gets you going. It kind of kickstart everything and you give it a score, you do your thing so that it sets the tone, you get going. So theoretically you're getting that out of the way. So I like the idea of maybe if it's a gin panel, send out a dummy gin panel. If it's a whiskey panel, send out a dummy whiskey panel. Don't necessarily even tell the judges.
No, definitely not.
Let them score it like they would anyway.
If you tell them, then it's a nothing panel.
Then it's not the next panel. We'll just get fucked.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but then you just wipe out all those scores or they're irrelevant because it's all the same product. Hell, you could send out a flight of four and they're literally the exact same product. Just you could get an interesting baseline from your judges that way too.
I'd be interested to dive deeper, definitely not today, but on what, like, let's take whiskey, for example, what spirits do you use on a dummy flight? Is it something that's already in the competition, or do you have, do you pull
Lafroig,
spirits?
Lafroig, all Lafroig.
Yeah, Lafroig and old granddad.
The first flight for everyone. Because I want to do, a flight of vodka right after Lafroy.
Strawberry Malort, you fucking slut.
Wow. And O'Brien, like, seriously, that is the number one thing with spirits judgings that I can't, nobody's cracked the code on spirit, on palate fatigue, right? I did a judging once. Right. It was a single day. And we tasted through 120 spirits or something. I mean, there's just no way.
How good were those final spirits?
We were so tired. We were so over it. I mean,
it's too many.
They were so good. Yeah.
I don't know that there's an answer to it. I mean, because
the answer is time.
Right. The answer is to do it over weeks, right? And that's what some of these single guys do, like the Whiskey Bible guy or Pulp Occult. Like, you know, they'll only taste three or four a night. Or a day, or whatever you want to call it, right? And they'll do it over a long period of time. But even that has its variables, right? Did you eat spicy Indian food before you tasted those five spirits? You know, and are you going to taste those again when you've eaten this chicken breast with nothing on it for dinner? I don't know.
Who eats that? Serial killers?
Raw.
Yeah. Raw.
Yeah, in a perfect world, you would taste it multiple times over a long period of time. You would do the scientific process, get as many sample sizes as you could, and you try and aggregate it out. That's not really possible with an actual spirits competition, but like 120 spirits in a day.
I would very much like to see at least extra time for the best of categories, a different day. Like, I hate when you try them the last, you know, end of second or third day, and it's the last thing you're doing, which makes sense. That's how it would have to work. But man, do I not feel like those are quality answers.
I don't know, because you're always butting up against the idea of you've got a lot of these competitions who are trying to get things done in a set amount of time because they have cost constraints, especially if you're dealing with nonprofits or associations. Like, they have the space for a couple days max. You know, you're really limited in what you can do. But, you know, ideally every other flight, you know, you're taking a break. You know, you do two flights, you take a 15-minute break, you do something to cleanse that palate. But even then, like you said, you need more time between a flight of Lafroy than you do a flight of
Casamigos
or a Kettle One.
Shot.
Casamigos. You know, you really, it's variable. Get drunk. Yeah, I don't know. And then you've got the whole issue too of, like you said, with the Zeno brought it up, when a judge is having an off day, if he's got a cold, you really got to hope that they recuse themselves, because that is an entire day of flight that it's just, they're not judging it the same way they would if they were on a clear day.
Well, I think that's a, you know, that's why you hire professionals.
Oh, because professionals don't get a cold?
No. They should be recusing themselves.
That was a dig right at you, Zeno.
Like, I mean, I got sick like halfway through. I'm like, damn, I got a sniffles. Yeah. Fuck off.
No, that's what I'm saying. Then you just say, hey, don't count my scores anymore. I don't feel like I'm up to this. Where, you know,
it's, right. Yeah, that's what I mean.
You still sit there and judge and everything's, you know, fine, but just, or discount my scores or count them less, weight them half.
Yeah, weighted.
Right. Well, whatever competition you have, like whatever competition it is, they should have some sort of process in place for that.
Yeah.
We just spray everyone with Lysol before they come in, so they're germ free.
Yep. Lemon fresh Lysol.
And then wash all of the tablecloths and Axe body spray.
Yeah, which kind of cocktail would you like your gin in? Lemon fresh or pine salt?
Make sure there's plenty of candles from that. What's that candle store you walk into and it's just like totally overwhelming?
Yankee.
Yeah, that. Yeah. This tasting nice. Competition sponsored by Yankee Candles. Hey, do you think BSG sells candles?
Oh, shit. We have a guest bringing up the sponsor. I was just thinking, I was like, man, Rob, you're really on top of
it. I got to learn my paycheck somehow. Oh, wait, you're not paying.
Yeah. Wait, you're getting paid? Shit. Honestly, I'm just glad someone's making money. And the only way that's possible is through sponsors like BSG.
I think they should have a competition with all the products that their producers make.
That's actually an awesome idea.
Yeah. So I brought that up to ACSA like way back in the day when they were.
No, that's my idea, Rob.
Don't you? Hang on. No, this
You're
is
gonna
different.
Need to fuck
different.
Off, Rob.
So I had this idea of what if you got the still manufacturers together and each of them had teams.
They would never go.
Each of them had teams and like, you know, the everybody who has a Vendome still was submitting Vendome products, and everybody who has a Carl was submitting their products that were made on a Carl, and everybody who has a, you know, Forsyth, whatever, right? And that was part of the competition. And like, you know, why wouldn't the vendors go for that? You know, because they were looking for ideas for vendors and, you know, how to make more money and that kind of thing. So why wouldn't the vendors go for that? Because if you're Vendome, why wouldn't you want to prove that your still makes the best spirits, right?
I agree, except that if you're Vendome, a lot of your clients are, you know, much more well-funded than...
Yeah, well, welcome to Major League Baseball, right?
If you're
like,
putting,
you know,
you're the New York Yankees up against
are it. Much well.
There's no salary cap,
right?
Yeah,
I'm not. I'm saying, yeah, but they're not going to want. You know, those still manufacturers aren't going to want to be in.
Why not?
Involved with that?
It's a way for them to prove that their still makes good stuff, right?
Right. Do you think the still makes the spirit?
Or? Well, not necessarily, but it's a part of it, right?
Absolutely, it's a part of it. But I mean, there's a lot to that. Right?
Yeah, totally. Anyway, sorry, I think getting sidetracked on that one.
No. That's a totally good sidebar. But yeah, BSG should do that because they sponsor our
because
podcast.
They sell so many things.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that because they sell a number of different yeast manufacturers, right? So the yeast manufacturer could get behind it and, you know, this person uses this yeast, whatever. So anyway.
I think we just invented the Still Talking BSG
there you go.
Competition.
Yeah,
and everything gets paired with a gin and tonic. Even
there's
if
only
a
one judge.
It's all the same.
No,
it's Zeno, and he's nude from the waist
Yogi
down.
Bear.
Thank you, BS.
Yogi Bear in this judging competition.
Okay, so I got another one. Oh man, you just grunted. Does that mean we're done?
I don't know. Do you want to go with another one?
He did.
I can re-grunt.
He did. That's usually what that means.
But just one more thing on the judging competition thing. So I've been on judging competitions where everybody's just sitting around one big table, right? We're all drinking the same thing. And all it takes is one person making a noise or a comment or looking with a funny face to skew every other judge at that table.
Absolutely. That's Bush League, though. Like, that should not happen.
Yeah.
It should be. I mean, it just shouldn't.
Yeah. No, it shouldn't, but it does. He's right, though. That is honestly the subjectivity and people influencing each other.
The power of suggestion is ridiculous.
Would you be more into entering a competition if you knew that they had rented out
like voting booths?
You know, a food science, you know, tasting room where it's all tiny little.
Colton, I know you did it to get some Block 15 gift cards. I know you.
I
know
did.
You did it. Right? So at Oregon State, you could go and like you could taste cheese or whatever, coffee creamer or wine or whatever, and you would do these. You would get into this, you know, food science tasting.
You sit in a little cubicle that has a window on
right,
the side
where,
that they
where
slide
there's
open.
Nothing in there, and you get it, and they're like, "Here is $15 at the local brew pub."
Exactly.
And you know, when you're in school, you're like, "Fuck yeah!" Right. So.
Wait, you don't think we could convince judges to come just off a $15 gift card? These professional industry people we've been talking
I'm
about.
I'm in, but...
Done.
That's all we yeah, need. That's a terrible thing, and I wish that it wouldn't happen, but you're right. So how do you combat that? So like, let's speak to the judge out there, because I'm certain listeners are judge, that... what do you do?
Well, what if everybody at the table got different flights? So you're not all tasting the same thing.
Oh my God. Just as someone who works in the back room.
I know that's going to, it's a pain in the ass, but you know.
also at that point, you don't need a panel anymore. I mean,
yeah, that's just sending out random.
They can just all fit individually.
No, well, you still have, you know, a flight of four things, all whiskey.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And you have four different whiskey flights, you know, half or a quarter of the table gets flight one, quarter of the table gets flight two. And so, you know, they're, you don't know what flight the person next to you has that they just made that face about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the only concern would be about, you know, especially if it's a super potent spirit, just wafting.
Yeah.
Right? You're it depends how close you're sitting, obviously. But
that's why everybody got colds, huh? That's how the cold spread?
Yeah. Well, that, he was licking everyone's glasses.
Wow.
Oh, God.
The ones on their face, obviously.
Just can't keep his face and everything. So, you know, that's an interesting point, because I think you raised the topic of, should there even be a panel in? Should there, you know, how valuable is it to have a panel discuss a flight of products? Is that beneficial? Is it a drawback? Because if you don't need them to do that, honestly, a competition can go way faster because everyone's just silent, runs through, makes the notes, and it's done. But most competitions I've been to, there's some level of discussion, collaboration, just, you know, they're actually talking about the product. What I found that I like personally best is when everyone gets a flight, everyone shuts up and does their initial tasting, initial scoring to themselves. Like, do your best not to influence the people around you, and then kind of collaborate.
Yeah, what we started, or like the panels that I've been on, we usually tally them up. We tally the score entirely. And if there's, you know, usually it's pretty close. And if there's like an outlier, then we start to discuss, right? And sometimes that sways people because of the power of suggestion. But for the most part, you're like, okay,
right,
I can see where you're coming from. There is a little element of that. But I think the best practice would be, is kind of what you're saying, Brian. Like, don't say anything. Drink it. Score it. Have everyone do that. Turn it in. Tally it. And if someone is way off or way high, way low or way high, talk about, okay, well, why? Right.
That's why I've never understood anchor judges at these competitions. I know a lot of them have them, but that to me seems like immediately you're electing someone to sway the rest of the table.
Right, you might as well just have one judge.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, ideally the goal of an anchor judge is basically just to manage and keep everyone on time. So make sure that the time is running smoothly, make sure they're gathering the notes, make sure that they're tallying the scores. But you're right, it does have that human psychological element of, okay, he's
Yogi, I'm Boo Boo,
lead of this table. Yeah. Exactly. I better listen, otherwise I'm off. And, you know, I think part of the idea of a panel too is there's, you know, you're going to have some younger, less experienced panelists, so they're learning and they're being educated at that table. But at the same time, if you're sending a product in, you don't want to pay your entry fee and your potential medal to train up a judge. You want someone who is really qualified and have a high caliber so that they could theoretically do it on their own. So I don't know. There is an argument against the idea of collaboration discussion. You know, I actually would like to hear more about why panels are really necessary. I know I enjoy them. I like them because I learn a lot from them, but that's not necessarily why someone's sending in a spirit to get judged. It's not for me, even though it should be.
You just want all the spirits brought to you at once and you'll go through them. Slowly.
Mix them all together.
Yeah.
Or fast.
In one cup.
Yeah.
In one giant trough.
A feed bag of alcohol.
They can just suckle from.
And a big goblet of, there it is.
This is a real for real grunt. Final thoughts.
So what's the score, Rob? What the hell?
Yeah, what is it?
I only got, he never said Casamigos. He kept saying it the right way, finally.
I meant of the baseball game.
Oh, baseball game?
Sure.
The Nationals won.
Casamigos.
Yeah, they're going on to play the Dodgers now. Yep.
What can you do to be the best judge? It's one attribute to be the best judge. And two, my second final thought slash question is potato chips, pretzels, or popcorn? You can only have one.
All right. My first answer is Rocky's workout routine. And my second answer is whatever Rocky eats for his workout routine.
Dun, 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 dun.
So he punches raw meat. Yeah. And he definitely eats popcorn, right? Like, he's definitely eating popcorn.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Nailed it.
Hey, Zeno.
And that really works because, you know, he's sweaty. He's got raw meat all over his hands. Perfect judge.
Yep. Yes, Rob.
As payment for me being on this podcast today, I was wondering if you could do the How It's Made song for me. Yes.
Yeah.
It's my son's favorite show right now, and so it's on all the time.
You have an amazing son, because that show is incredible.
Yeah.
I love that show. Yeah.
But Zeno, really do cut that out and send it to Rob for his ring.
Yes. And it needs to be the opening music. That's the porn music you guys
use. And in fact, we will also add that to our site that any listener can purchase for a small fee.
Well, it's like, you know, here's the NPR thing again, but you ever listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? Yeah. So when you win, right, you get Carl Castle on your voicemail. Yeah.
Sure.
Same thing. You guys going to start doing call-ins?
Wait, who won this episode?
So you can choose from Zeno doing the How It's Made thing. Brian saying Casamigos, Casamigos, Casamigos 8 times fast, or Colton laughing like Krusty the Clown.
There you go. That's their answering machine. Yeah. That's all they get.
Yeah. Rob, thank you again.
Wait,
for making
I need
this
answers for this final thought.
Potato chips and don't be a dick. Those are my answers. Yeah. No, seriously. So if you're a judge, it's real easy to be an asshole sometimes, especially when you get a really bad product. If you're taking notes that will go back to the actual producer of that one, don't pull your punches. Be honest. If there's a problem with it, actually say what's wrong with the product. Don't sugarcoat it because you're not doing them any favors, but also don't be a dick and say it, you know, say that it makes your children cry or something, you know, actually give them some positive feedback that is helpful. So there you go.
Rob.
All right. I'm with him. Be honest. You know, it's not going to help anybody if you're not honest. And take the time to actually put some notes down, you know, like if you just like circle the numbers and that's it, that's all you get, then it doesn't help me any. And that's a big part of why I submit to judging. Right. Definitely potato chips.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, you guys can... I'm going to go with pretzels. I love pretzels.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Pretzels are all right. What was the third one? Okay. Popcorn? Yeah. Fuck that.
I don't know. My wife loves popcorn. Right. She pretty much, if she could marry popcorn and divorce me.
I hate how it gets stuck in your teeth. It drives me nuts.
Dude, that's my that's my problem with it, too.
Thank you.
Dude, that's my problem with it, too. She loves it. She loves it. My suggestion for being a good judge is, I like what you guys are saying, like honesty, but think about that maybe you're receiving that. So, you know, don't say this is shit. Use constructive criticism, right?
Yeah.
So we pretty much just said the same thing multiple times, which is what we do on this podcast. So
Casamigos.
Exactly. And this episode of the Still Talking Podcast was brought to you by BSG.
We talked about BSG and how amazing they are, and they're going to do a competition.
I know. BSG is awesome. BSG Distilling demonstrates how they can improve your artisan spirits with better ingredients, dedicated customer service.
They are great. And I buy a lot from BSG. I'll tell you
there,
that was
an actual plug. Yeah, they're good people.
Yeah, I actually do too. And we utilize High Proof Creative too. Not gonna leave Karen, my girl, hanging out.
Karen's a badass. She does all the things and so much better than we.
Karen, I'm really sorry for calling you my girl.
Yeah, that was super misogynistic. And
it wasn't misogynistic. You know, like you're like, you know, my girl, my boy, whatever you want to say, my boy. I don't know. What am I supposed to say here? Stop canceling me. All right.
No, I think yeah. you should keep talking and just dig that hole yes, deeper.
I'm going to take my pants off and put a tie on and be done with it. Yeah.
Hey, ask yourself, what have you done today yeah. to reduce FET?
That's true.
Love being here. Thanks, guys.
Love you, dummies.
All right.